Good morning and welcome to ASI's Tuesday Morning Show, where ASI's most outspoken editors talk promo products. I'm Melinda Lagos, editor-in-chief of ASI's magazines, and I'm here this morning in our Trevose, Pennsylvania offices with quite an outspoken group, I must say. We've got Joe Haley, star of the Joe Show, right here this morning, and he's getting ready to rant. Is that right, Joe?
That's correct, Melinda.
Michelle Bell is here, and she's never at a loss for an opinion. Michelle, would you say that's accurate?
I would say that's dead on the money.
I'd say. Let me answer for her.
We've got Andy Cohn, a.k.a. Captain Killjoy, here in the studios. Good morning, Andy. Why do they call you Captain Killjoy?
Just wait till the news.
Yeah. We got a sad one coming up. And, of course, the very opinionated Jersey girl, Kathy Houston, is in the house, and we know how opinionated you are by your little soliloquy you just gave us about the Real Housewives of New Jersey.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for that one.
Yes. Very exciting. Well, perhaps no one in our studios this morning is as outspoken as Mr. Tim Andrews, ASI's president and CEO. Tim is our special guest today and is going to be talking about ASI's first quarter sales study. How are you this morning, Tim?
I'm great. Was that a compliment, Melinda? I'm not sure.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Backhanded.
Well, thanks for joining us. If you would like to talk to Tim, give us a call this morning at 215-953-4979. We're also going to be taking your calls this morning to find out any prospecting or cold calling challenges you might have. If we put you on the air, we will give you a $25 gift card. Start dialing now at 215-953-4979. Joe, what's on tap for today's show?
Well, Melinda, as you said, Tim Andrews is here to discuss our first quarter sales study, and you can ring us up at 215-953-4979 to talk about your challenges in getting new business. You can also email us at radio@asicentral.com. If we put you on the air, you will score a $25 gift card. Since Earth Day is every day, we have a look at some hot Earth Day products.
Is it really every day?
It should be. Think locally.
You're waving a little green bag.
Okay. Anyway, financial services are hot for loyalty programs, and Michelle has the goods on that. Today we have a look at two campaigns that didn't fare so well. Marketing myth number one is going to be Grand Theft Auto giveaway,
ooh,
and marketing myth number two is Domino's Pizza debacle.
Oh, those morons.
I have a look at six examples of workplace rudeness. Kathy's going to tell us about marketing to tweens, what to do there. Michelle has some presentation tips that will help you rock your client's world. Despite the current sluggish economy, the marketing of luxury goods is pretty strong right now. I'm going to rant about something, so you'll want to stay tuned to find out what's in my crawl. Besides bringing beer on sales call, Kathy's going to tell us four things you should know about selling to men.
That's a good tip, Joe.
All this and the industry news in 60 seconds, Andy.
Thank you, Joe. Well, breaking news this morning, ASI's first quarter industry sales survey is out. In the first quarter of 2009, industry sales decreased by 17.6%. This is the third consecutive quarterly decline, dating back to the third quarter of last year. The net decrease in industry revenues amounts to about $700 million. As a sign of the tough times, Broder Brothers, the largest supplier in the ad specialty market, has been in the news lately. It has made multiple public filings over the past week as it tries to restructure some of its debt. The apparel supplier says that it is fighting to avoid filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy by renegotiating the terms of its outstanding loans and delaying payments that have recently been due. Check out Promogram later today for a full report on this and the first quarter industry sales survey. Looking for some good news, guys?
Yes,
all right. A new survey from American Express shows that entrepreneurs believe that the current economic climate makes them sharper business owners. In fact, 37% say the economy has actually created opportunities for their companies. So there you go. Plus, later on today in Promogram, we'll have a brand spanking new edition of the Joe Show. Joe, care for a preview?
Sure. I'm going to be a shining star today and let everyone know what's going on with flashlights.
Shining star. You're always a shining star, Joe.
Well, thank you, Andy. Hey, who's rocking the board today and rocking the phones?
Oh, of course. It's Samantha Bates is ready to take your calls right now at 215-953-4979.
Nice cue, Joe.
And, of course, we have Steve Hawk making those lovely sound effects. Well, thanks, Andy. Well, there you have it, the industry's first quarter sales survey. More than 17% of industry members were down in the first quarter. Tim, is this a number that surprises you?
No, I think, in our conversations, people are, having a pretty rough first quarter. I think the bad news is that almost 18%, about 18% of sales decline year over year is what people told us. Certainly among the larger distributors, there's more difficulty than the smaller distributors. But the good news is that it seems as if as the years progressed, each month things have gotten a little better. January is a very bad month. February is a little better than January. March is a little better than February. So, we're hearing that it's improving month over month, but certainly year over year, people are having a really tough time.
And again, what's kind of the breakdown? You said that the bigger distributors are having a tougher time. Are there any other kind of comparisons?
Yeah, among distributors with more than $1 million in sales, about 61% tell us in the first quarter that they expect the year's sales to be down. So 61% are going to be down for the year, they think. Smaller distributors, those that do $250,000 or less, 43% thought their sales would be lower. So they're much more optimistic. They tend to be a more optimistic crew because they're smaller, they're more nimble perhaps, they have more ability to move quickly. Some of the larger distributors, of course, may be more dependent on a large customer or two and have a much different, more difficult time.
I would echo what Tim said. In our conversations with distributors for this story, we're really hearing that there was a bit of a sort of bottoming out in like mid to late January, and January was quite bad. And then they're starting to see some encouraging signs starting in March. Mm-hmm. So that's good. The amount of quotes that they're making are up, and they're just seeing a little bit of loosening of client budgets that they hadn't seen in the first couple months of the year. So hopefully that trend continues and, things pick up a bit.
We're actually also seeing that, ESP Online, which has 33,000 users, we track in aggregate how much searching they're doing, how many proposals they're doing and using ESP, and that's been picking up as well. It was tougher in the first quarter in year-over-year comparisons, but it seems to be improving. People are sending out more proposals to their clients and doing more things. Overall, though, when we ask people what they think 09 will look like in terms of sales versus 08, about 51% of the people we talked to in the survey said that they thought they'd be lower. 21% said the same, and only 28% of the distributors we surveyed thought they would be higher in 09 versus 08 in terms of total sales. So, 72% saying the same or lower is not a great number for the industry.
No. Any breakdown in terms of regions? Are some regions doing worse or better than others?
Yeah, it seems as if the Southwest is a little stronger than other areas. The Midwest is getting hit pretty hard, I think. If you're in the greater Detroit, greater Midwest sort of belt, it's a little tougher time. And the coast seem to be getting hit a little harder. Financial services institutions and real estate, whether you're in California or Florida, or obviously, markets have been pretty important to promotional product sellers. On the other hand, some of the comments we had written in, we had about 250, 300 people writing comments, and some of the people are saying that, they really feel that there's going to be a bounce back because the cost per impression of promotional items is so much lower than a lot of other alternatives in marketing. And so a number of people are using the survey that we conducted and the PowerPoint that we've got out there for distributors to be able to educate their end buyers and prospects on the power and the low cost of those impressions. And that study is available at asicentral.com for people to be able to use to educate their end buyers on why to choose promotional products over other kinds of advertising and marketing they might want to do.
Anything else you'd recommend that distributors do right now?
I think prospecting is really important, but don't forget your current client base. So, certainly you got to spend more time prospecting, looking for those new clients, but don't forget that the people that spent last year, when they come back in the market, you've got to be there and you've got to understand their business. So one of the biggest suggestions I would make to people is if you think you talked to a customer 4 months ago and they said they didn't want to spend anything right now, keep in very close contact, ask them how their business is changing, ask them what they're doing and what they need to do to get more sales, what markets they're going after, so you can come in with some really creative ideas. Don't abandon those customers just because they may not have renewed some order that they, had put through you, three times in a row. Don't forget about them because it's easy to sort of get discouraged and maybe don't call back, but call back because, boy, you want to be there when they decide they want to buy.
Kathy, that was a big piece of advice you gave last week in your story when you interviewed $1 million salespeople.
Right.
To be their frozen budget could be unfrozen.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was also part of the tips that people during my webinar last week gave too, in the 30 sales ideas.
Yeah. Take people with frozen budgets out
to
lunch.
Out to lunch. Don't abandon them.
Well, that's great. Well, Tim, you mentioned prospecting, and now, as promised, we're going to take your calls to help you with any prospecting challenges you have. Call us right now at 215-953-4979, and we'll send you a $25 gift card. We already have a few callers on the line. On line one, we have a distributor named Steve. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, good. Steve.
Hey, what's your biggest prospecting challenge, Steve?
Well, the thing is, some of my best clients keep placing small orders, even though I'm pushing for them to do bigger projects. They say they understand the need to continue marketing in a down economy, but they counter that with having nothing in the budget. So I'm not sure what I should do. Hard sell them, cut prices, drop the client. I'm just not sure what to do with this.
Any ideas for Steve?
Well, last thing you want to do is drop the client.
Well, yeah.
And I think the second to last thing you want to do is going with a hard sell. Also, you don't want to be seen as that salesperson that comes in ready to whip out the order pad and start writing orders for them if they can't afford it. But as Kathy said, and she wrote in the article, you know, take them out to lunch, keep them, you know, there, keep, you know, working with them, calling them, right, visiting them, you know, let them know that you're there for them. And eventually the marketing budget will unfreeze itself in.
And I think you, Steve, I think you can help that get unfrozen. You know, when they're doing a program that's maybe a little smaller, you know, ask them, what are your goals for this program, and how many, you know, if they're trying to get phone calls in, or, you know, whatever they're trying to do, right, what's their goal, and understand that going in, and then say to them, now, if you meet that goal, you know, what would be the next step in this program, and how would we roll the program out, so that if the client says, I'm looking for 50 phone calls as a result of this direct mail piece, say to them, okay, if you got 50 phone calls, then what would you do? And how would you roll the program out to a bigger thing? So get them thinking about the next step.
Okay.
And then keep in touch with them as that program's rolling out. And the minute they get to whatever that goal was that you remembered, that you wrote down, and maybe you reconfirmed to them in email, say, oh, great, you hit the 50 phone calls you were looking at getting as a result of the direct mail. Now let's talk about that next stage of the program,
right,
you wanted to do. So sort of roll them forward.
So get involved in a lot more than the initial campaign.
I think you need to get involved, yeah, in the beginning of the campaign, through the whole thing, make sure that they really follow through. The other thing that we're hearing a lot of distributors say is that their clients are buying the product and then they sort of just get frozen. They're, you know, they're being pulled in five directions. Maybe,
right,
they had some layoffs in their department. You know, do whatever you can do to make sure that they get the product out to their clients and their prospects, so the stuff's not sitting in a desk drawer or in a closet someplace, mm-hmm, and isn't really generating profit for them. Because if you come back in 3 months and they haven't actually sent the product out or given the product out to their customers, you're never going to get the reorder because the product's still sitting in their offices.
Right. Okay.
Well, good luck, Steve. Stay
right
on the line for your gift card. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
On line four, we have Stanley this morning. Good morning, Stanley.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Where are you very from, good, Stanley?
I'm from Sherman Oaks, California. My company's GetSmart Promotions. I've been in the industry about 24 years or so.
Oh, great. Well, what's
you're up early.
Good morning. What's your prospecting challenge?
Well, the challenge that I'm having, and I was wondering what your thoughts were, is that, you know, in this economy, it's almost like the distributors are killing our own industry by undercutting. I read an article by Jack Nadel years ago that said if you don't run your business at a 32% margin, in the long run, you won't be around. And there's a lot of undercutting by distributors, and yet at the same time, that's the first thing. How would you, you know, how do you deal with that? It's like, don't give up your margin, but don't lose the sale.
Well, I think you have to stress the value that you provide. You know, there's obviously increasingly distributors are fighting, you know, online competitors that are offering the lowest price possible, but they can't offer the service and sort of partnership that you as a, you know, personal distributor can provide. So I think that's something that you probably need to stress to them. You know, I wouldn't suggest cutting your prices to the bone like they are, but you know, the value that you can provide in showing that to them and showing how you've provided that sort of you know, personal touch value to other clients might be a good point to stress.
So you can itemize everything on an order and then sit down with the client. Where do you want me to take, you know, money, mm-hmm, away from? Creativity, delivery, you know, quality control, mm-hmm, product quality. I mean, whatever it is, and then they'll see that you're selling at the right price. The other thing too, you don't want to get this client into the habit of thinking the next time he's going to get that cheap price, and then the next time it's going to be just as low, and the next time, and then.
But also work with your suppliers, too, and see where they can offer special pricing that you can occasionally pass on to your clients. So then they'll see that you are actually trying to help them out in a down economy.
I think that's a good point, bringing up that this is a special price. This is something,
right,
I've arranged for you. I also think that, you know, if you cut your price, you never get the price back. You know, no one ever will take that back. So, you know, if it's a really good client, you know, one thing to think about is rather than reducing your price, say to them, you know, yes, you want 100. You know, I'm going to be able to get you 110 this time. At the same price the 100 was. So you're not reducing the price on the number that they're really ordering, but you're giving them 10 additional, mm-hmm, you know, quantity of whatever you're ordering. That gives them some additional product to give to prospects and clients, so they're going to get more business as a result of that, and they'll remember that you helped them out there. And a lot of suppliers will help you. You know, they're really looking to move inventory. They're looking at how do they help the distributors, especially ones that have been good customers of theirs. You certainly can't call a supplier you've never done business with before and start asking for favors. But if you've got some suppliers that have been special suppliers, I think you can really work with them to figure out, you you know, what are the products in their inventory right now that they're, you know, interested in moving, and what can you do to help them and make it a win-win for the client and for the distributor as well, as well as for the supplier.
That's right, and that's why you need to partner with suppliers from the start in each product category so that you have supplier partners there.
Sure. Stanley, did you have a follow-up question?
Well, I'll tell you, my long-term vision, I've been in the industry a long time, and the thing that I've seen happen in this industry, you know, years ago before the internet, you really were a resource because they couldn't just Google the next guy, couldn't just Google the pen. I mean, heck, you can Google an ASI number and find out exactly where something comes from, which is why I don't show, you know, samples that have ASI numbers on it. And I'd love to see the vendors reel this industry back in to where we're all protected again, where we're not just a commodity, where the vendors, there's a couple vendors that actually have done this. Their websites are without ASI numbers, without PPAI numbers, without codes, because although the customers may not know what the code stands for, which you can Google and find out, but they do know it stands for commission. And my grandfather used to tell me that customers just don't want us, they know we make commission, they just don't want us to make commission. They want it for as little as they can, and that's their job. But I would love to see the vendors start to do websites where there really is nothing on it, and then there's a login area for distributors to find it. There's a lot of these email companies. My friend at SmartBlast, Michael Ryan, the owner, I always asked him, I said, you know, when I push that button that makes it a safe email, it still lives the ASI number and the code. And I put out a challenge a long time ago. I said, I'll bet you $1,000 any distributor who makes his own flyer, they're not going to put the codes on and the ASI numbers on. And do you see at all the move to where the suppliers are actually putting out pieces that we can use that are really safe for us to use? Because a lot of times we do all this research and homework, and then the distributor, in doing their job, trying to get a better price, trying to do what their marketing people are telling them to do, just take our stuff and go to the next group of people, say, hey.
I think if you're just forwarding something like that, you know, we certainly take care in the ASI email express to make sure that that doesn't happen. And, you know, you should tell your friend to sort of do it a little differently perhaps. But I think the best thing you can do is to, use ESP or a service like that to create a proposal that's very customized to your client. I think forwarding to a client a piece of marketing material that you receive from a supplier, while it may be effective if you're meeting with them in person, I think creating something that's very custom to them using, you know, ESP online or something is much smarter, because it's going to look like you really spent some time and you did spend some time. I mean, you're arguing on one hand that you're concerned because distributors are cutting prices and people are looking for the lowest price, and at the same time you're saying that you don't want to take the time to make a proposal that's custom to the client. You just want to forward on another piece of marketing material. I mean, I think you're taking the lazy way out, and I think you need to sort of think about, you know, what service are you providing and what it's worth.
All right, well, thanks so much, Stanley. Stay on the line, and we'll get you your gift card. We have time for one more call on line one. We have Bob. Good morning, Bob. Good morning, Bob.
I am really glad to hear the last speaker. I didn't catch his name, but I second his sentiments 100%. I've tried to impress on several vendors, even at the ASI trade shows and at the big show in Chicago. The name that's important to my client is my name and my company name, because if it goes right, I get the credit. But if it goes wrong, I have to fix it and satisfy it. And same thing with the emails, the literature. And you notice if you look at the vendor's catalogs, and of course it's their product and their catalog, but every single page has their web address on it. And I guess I'm just feeling the same thing that the other gentleman just said. If I do the legwork, I do the research, and I provide the solution, I expect to write the order. And I'm not going to hand a bluebird to somebody else or give the client enough information to go shop it. And I really wish that ASI would back up small dealers and distributors like us that feel this way. I love their literature. It's gorgeous. And I certainly want to use it, and I use a ton of it in spite of the fact, but I only use it with secure accounts. I don't use it with prospects, because I think it's a natural tendency for people to feel they have to do their due diligence and shop the pricing. you know, to get the best deal they possibly can.
I think, you know, my best suggestion on that is to use suppliers that are creating product and you know, marketing material that you feel comfortable with. And you know, if you don't feel comfortable with someone, you know, go on to ASICentral.com and rate a supplier. You can tell us what you think about them. And you can use that star system to know, you know, how the communication goes. You can leave comments. And, you know, I think that's very helpful to people to be able to know what you think about suppliers that are out there. A lot of suppliers are doing great stuff. And I think that's what we have to keep our mind about. You know, there's 3,700 suppliers, and I think the very vast majority of them are looking out for you in their marketplace and doing as much as they can to help.
Thanks so much for calling, Bob. Please stay on the line. We appreciate your opinion. Bye. All right, guys, does anyone know what day tomorrow is?
Wednesday.
Earth Day.
Yes,
what
holiday?
Hump Day.
It's Hump Day and Earth Day.
Earth Day.
And I'm sure distributors out there have gotten some different product requests from clients. I know Joe has some friendly, earth-friendly products he wants to share with us today.
Absolutely. This is the radio version of the Joe Show. I'm going to run through these quickly later on. We'll get the company names up there on the website with the ASI numbers. The first one, and I'm going to kind of go up into the camera here. I love this one. It's a little cup, and I just actually planted this on Friday.
What's growing in there?
There's going to be forget-me-nots. They've already sprouted and stuff.
I could never forget you.
It's got feet on it. It's got a little happy, smiling earth face there. So this is kind of neat. It can brighten up any office, any home, and they can be planted into the ground in any garden. So this is a nice way for a company to say, we care about the earth.
Let me see that, Joe.
I'm going to pass it over to Tim.
Pass it over here.
Okay. Tim's going to steal it.
Let me get
next product up here. This is an award. Everyone gives out an award. A lot of companies give out awards. This is made out of 100% bamboo, which grows extremely fast. And, you know, we don't have to worry about deforestation. So if you're looking for an eco-friendly
deforestation.
We're not going to cut down
bamboo
any trees.
Bamboo does grow really.
Oh, my God.
Like,
it's crazy.
So 6 feet in an hour or something.
It's crazy. Now, pencils. These are eco-friendly pencils. They're actually made out. I'm going to break it open even though you can't
see.
Whoa. It's to show that you can pass this around.
Is that recyclable?
These are made out of recycled newspaper. So the newspapers that you're recycling are actually being put into pencils. What a great thing for companies to use. Art schools can use it too because they come in colored versions. Kathy doesn't really care about that. This is my favorite of all the eco-friendly
Kathy's
products.
Just cynical.
Golf leagues, golf clubs, golf courses give out these. These are actually eco-friendly golf balls, and they are made out of 100% recycled material. What I love about it, when you open up the box, inside here there is actually a bag to mail back any golf balls that get cut or damaged you can't use anymore. Golfers will, you know, slice them, they'll get a cut in it, you can't use it. What they'll do, you put them in this bag, send them back to the manufacturer. The manufacturer promises that they will recycle these balls into future golf balls.
That's very cool.
We're just lousy with balls over here.
If people want to find out more about where to get these products, or can we put it up on our site?
Yeah, absolutely. At the end of the show, I'm going to give Samantha all the information for the products we have down here. And if you want to look at any of them, you can contact those suppliers.
Fantastic.
Cool. It's getting a little crazy here with the golf balls.
Put the golf balls away now.
All right, guys. Sometimes the best way to learn new marketing tactics is to learn from others' mishaps. And boy, were there some marketing mishaps this week. Andy, why don't you start by filling us in on marketing mishap number one.
All right. Marketing mishap number one is courtesy of the makers of a new video game called Godfather 2, which is a Grand Theft Auto style adventure.
You're talking to me?
Okay.
Is that from Godfather?
No.
Wow. Okay.
That's
no
Taxi Driver.
Not only was that
That's
bad,
an editorial
was wrong
meeting.
Reference.
That's an editorial meeting, Kathy.
So the makers of this game, to try to get some extra PR, they sent a gift pack to journalists. And unfortunately, in that gift pack was a set of brass knuckles, along with other items, a cigar, silk handkerchief, and a book of matches.
Who doesn't need a pair of brass knuckles?
Well, see, here's the problem. In many states, just having brass knuckles is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
So
you actually tried to purchase.
I'm also from New Jersey. Kathy and I know all about this.
They managed in a promotional campaign to turn their recipients into criminals. I'd say that's a marketing miss.
I applaud their creativity, though. I mean, it's a shame that, you know, they were bordering on, you know, breaking the law, but I think it's a creative idea.
They should have found some plastic ones or something. You know, maybe a squirt gun that looks like brass knuckles. You just hit the thing and it squirts somebody in the face instead of hitting them. You know?
Yeah, no, I think they did try to be creative. I agree.
So what did they do?
Unfortunately, it backfired. They made phone calls to the people who got them and quietly tried to have them sent back.
I wonder if anyone. I bet some people kept them because they.
Well, look, you know what? It worked because they got a little bit of PR out of it. So that's all they really wanted.
All right. Well, this second one is just disgusting. Michelle or Kathy? Kathy, you're talking about Domino's.
Who's got it?
Right. Well, you should always wonder if they are really green peppers on your pizza from now on, because this is really disgusting.
Yikes.
Two employees from Domino's, who are now fired and facing charges, posted a video on YouTube on Monday showing them doing gross things to a Domino's pizza. For one,
you
the guy
even tell us what they are.
I'll tell
gross.
You two things. The guy was sticking the cheese up his nose yeah. and then putting it on the pizza, oh, and he was also passing gas on to the salami on the pizza. I don't even know what to say. Now, come on.
It's pretty. It's
so
pretty
it went up on
video.
YouTube, and how
it
many
went
people
on,
viewed it?
At least 700,000 people have viewed it.
That's it.
Right, but Domino's is getting fairly high marks from social networking and crisis management gurus because they responded fairly quickly.
What did they do?
They
got the Grand Theft Auto
not quick
game,
enough,
Brass
though.
Knuckles, and took care of those.
That's yeah. right. They took care of those in place. They tweeted it on Twitter. They did a Twitter response, and they did it like within a few hours. And they're also mulling a lawsuit against the employees.
Their
for,
CEO
for being
also.
Not funny, because I've seen this thing.
No,
it's just not funny.
It's
what did they get arrested for? I mean,
food
farting
tampering.
On a pizza?
Food
I mean,
tampering
what's
is
the
a
law?
Yeah.
I don't know. There are.
Food tampering is a felony in North Carolina, which is where they were. And so here are things that experts say marketers can do quickly. First of all, you're supposed to monitor your social media sites. What
that is
see
an
if
issue
they're
that
talking
about
your
before.
Company, right? Second, respond quickly as Domino's did within hours. Respond at the flashpoint. It says Domino's first responded on consumer affairs blog, The Consumerist, whose activist readers helped track down the store and employees who made the video. Then it responded on the Twitter site, where all the talk and buzz was going on.
Gotcha.
Also, educate your workers what's appropriate in their social networking. And foster a positive culture so workers won't be doing
sticking
these disgusting things.
Exactly. I mean, you really need to tell someone that's inappropriate. Just deliver the pizza. Don't first shove it up your nose.
No, but you're supposed to set a positive culture so that they don't ever want to badmouth your company.
Well, we have a positive culture here, and I've never seen you stick anything up your nose.
Well, you haven't. Not yet.
You don't monitor YouTube too closely, obviously.
Obviously not. Well, we've talked on the show in the past about bad habits of coworkers. I remember Andy and I used to work with a publisher who would clip his nails in his cube, and the nails would fly over
Stop.
The cube
yeah,
and hit
disgusting.
People. But anyway, we're going to further that story today. Joe's got six examples of workplace rudeness. What's the rudest thing on your list?
The rudest thing?
Nothing here.
Well, what I hate to work worse is not saying hello to someone when they say hello
to
you.
Oh, yeah, I hate that.
I've been working on someone 5 years, and they finally... within this year, has started to say hello to me in the morning. Now,
it's like a social names? Experiment for you, Joe?
Well, yeah. Well,
who was that? Joe, who is that?
I'm not
he
saying.
He can't say.
I'm not saying.
Maybe they just don't like you.
It's you, Tim.
It could be, but, you know, you could just say hello. Good morning. You know, little,
I had that in my
old job.
Little
head nod with the raised eyes. You know.
Maybe they're
at
deaf.
A place in New York for 13 years, and the guy never said hello. Finally, by the 13th year, I would get a grunt. And I would aggressively say hello and smile.
Amy Levin, a former coworker, said that I assaulted people with my hellos in the hallway.
You assaulted?
So.
You assaulted?
Hello. So
okay, what's
anyway.
The second one on your list?
Interruptions.
Let's go.
Interruptions.
Like Tim
like
just
that.
Did.
Yeah, like what I'm saying is not so important.
That really worked out well.
His thoughts are more important than mine. Not saying thank you or please. That's a pet peeve of Michelle and
it is.
Mine.
Well,
it is.
Rich was just telling me the other day, people in Pennsylvania don't say... If you say thank you, they don't say you're welcome. They say, uh-huh.
But it's still an acknowledgement.
You're from New Jersey. What do you know?
Who here thanks pilots and flight
Me.
Attendants when they get off planes?
I
always do.
I do.
Andy does not.
Oh, I absolutely do.
Oh, come on. You're from New York.
I say thank you for not crashing.
No, I do.
What about
yeah.
you, Tim?
Thanks for getting me here.
I thank people all the time. I think it's really important. I think it's a very simple two-word phrase that people really appreciate because not that many people
it thank
It goes
people. A long way.
It
You're
really
right.
does.
Here's a few things we've discussed in the
Unless
past.
It's really late. Then
you know what?
Then
let me
I
just say
anything.
I'm going to interrupt you. You know, when I interview somebody, before I hire anyone, I always take them out for a meal, like whether it's lunch or whatever, even if it's the cafeteria here. And I always watch how they treat people. People that are the cashier, the people
Absolutely.
Behind, because you can really learn a lot about mm-hmm. somebody whether they say thank you to somebody who yep. just served them a Coca-Cola or something, and if they just ignore them, I'm not going to hire them.
This and what true. Do you do if they order a martini?
Did hire them.
So they, as long as they say thank you to the waiter and ask if I want one, then we're okay.
Hire them predatorial.
I once took a can to lunch, and before I got there, he was finishing his first martini and ordered a second.
Oh, wow.
And then they made me hire him. They hired him against my will, and then
it turned
we
out
had
to be
some
an alcoholic.
Major problems.
That was not here, for the record.
That was in New York City.
I always at the end of an interview care. Give a business card just to hope that they send me an email to say thank you for your time. I always look for
and
that.
And a handwritten letter, I think.
Yes.
But,
foul
but
language?
Last week, okay.
He's not finished.
Foul
Sorry,
language.
I interrupted.
Ah, yeah, you did. Foul language. That's another one.
Mm-hmm. Whoopsie daisy.
That's rude, yeah.
So Michelle is struggling
there.
In the corner.
Gee willikers.
All right, well, last week we talked about marketing to women. Today we have some tips about what you should do when you're selling to men.
Bring beer.
Okay.
Is beer one of them?
No, it's not. Okay, the economy has changed the way men buy now. They used to throw caution to the wind and buy anything if they liked it.
Andy, you're always throwing caution to the wind.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's right.
So now what do they do?
Now they're paying attention, and they're not...
Men are paying attention.
Wow, we're finally paying
attention. They're keeping their hands out of their wallets.
Oh.
Yes, and they're speaking a new buying language. When men talk about their new buying habits, the conversation sounds eerily similar to how women speak now.
Ah.
Here are some excerpts from recent discussions with men. I've become my grandmother. Instead of pitching the flyers, I'm now cutting out coupons.
Oh, that's funny, because you ridiculous. Just said your husband started cutting out
oh
coupons.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's ridiculous.
He brought one to dinner.
He is ridiculous.
He's
ridiculous these days.
No way.
Tim, are you clipping coupons now?
No. I don't either.
Just the time involved in that is a waste.
It's very difficult, I think.
Well, we've been getting coupons in the mail, and Steve brings them out to dinner.
Whatever.
Okay. And now... men are saying, unless I really need it, I'm not buying. You know how guys would just go into the Best Buy and buy a flat screen TV just because it's really cool? Well, they're not doing that anymore. You have to really prove the worth of the product or service that you're selling to men these days. They're not big risk takers anymore. Also, it pays to educate the guys on how things work or how the product is, what it's going to do for them. They really think that's a good investment in their time and money.
Like the functionality?
So all the functionality, tips we gave for marketing to women now apply to men, whereas they apparently didn't before.
Right, and they're solution-oriented by nature. I don't know if I said this already. So even when being cautious, a man tends to zero in on buying solutions much faster than a woman. So just show him the solutions.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Kath. We have 30 seconds for a call on line 4 from Moish. Hello? Up, I have moisture.
We lost him.
All right, well, we are out of time today. I'd like to thank our special guest, Mr. Tim Andrews, for joining us today.
Thank you, Melinda.
Thanks to all of our loyal listeners. Be sure to check us out same time next week when Stitch's editor Nicole Rowlander tells us about some hot new markets for decorated apparel. Have a great day.